Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Let's kick off here in the United States, where the Major League Soccer playoffs resume later Tuesday night. We'll have first leg matches in the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. In the East, the Columbus Crew will host Toronto FC in Ohio. And in the West, the Houston Dynamo will be at home against the defending MLS Cup champion Seattle Sounders. Houston goalkeeper Joe Willis sizes up the Sounders.
They're a good team. They have some good players going forward, and they have some big boys in the back. So they'll be a tough team. They've been, you know, a tough team all year and last year too. So, like I said, we have confidence in ourselves. We're worried about ourselves and what we're going to bring to the game. And I think we'll be all right.
You might say Joe Willis and the Dynamo have been all right when it comes to playing the Sounders in Houston. The Sounders have never won in the Texas City in 9 matches, losing 5 and drawing 4. On the flip side, the Dynamo has never won in Seattle, losing 7 matches and drawing 2. The Dynamo is also unbeaten in 9 consecutive matches at home, and they haven't given up a goal at their BBVA Compass Stadium in 357 minutes, or almost 4 matches. Dynamo defender Dylan Remick talks about the team's mindset playing at home.
It's a mentality thing for us. I think we feel comfortable at home. We play our game plan very well at home. And then, you know, we did really well at the beginning of the season, which sort of gave us a mental edge over teams coming in throughout the rest of the season. So, you know, we're looking to continue that streak, obviously, on Tuesday, and continue the rhythm that we've been building throughout the year.
Taking a look at the Columbus Crew Toronto FC series, Washington Post soccer writer Stephen Goff says Columbus is the most intriguing story of the 2017 MLS playoffs. Amid owner Anthony Precourt's plans to move the club to Austin, Texas after the 2018 season. Columbus also features a handful of African players. Striker Kekuta Mane is from Gambia, while Mohamed Abu, Lalas Abubakar, Harrison Uffel, and Jonathan Mensah are all from Ghana. Meanwhile, Toronto FC will be without key attackers Sebastian Jovinko and Jozy Altidore, who combined for 31 goals in the regular season. Both players are serving 1-game suspensions, so they'll be back for the decisive second leg on November 29th in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Meanwhile, the second leg in the Houston-Seattle series will be 1 day later, November 30th, in Seattle, Washington. The winners of the two series will advance to the MLS Cup championship match on December 9th. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Just ahead, our Daybreak Africa sportsman Samson Omale analyzes Africa's World Cup-bound teams. So keep on the sunny side!
Oh, keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help you every day. It will brighten all the way. If you keep on the sunny side of life. Oh, keep on the sunny side. Sunny side of life.
Now let's go to Abuja, Nigeria's political capital, where our Daybreak Africa sportsman Samson Omale is based. During Monday's show, Samson gave us insights on Nigeria's Super Eagles, the first African team to qualify for next year's World Cup football tournament in Russia. The Super Eagles will be joined in Russia by four more African teams: the Pharaohs of Egypt, the Atlas Lions of Morocco, the Carthage Eagles of Tunisia, and the Lions of Teranga of Senegal. I asked Samson how he would rate the World Cup chances of those four teams.
Now, from that configuration, we have three North African teams and two West African teams. Of course, Senegal and Nigeria from West Africa. Tunisia, of course, Morocco and Egypt are great sides. But again, if you look at the way Morocco has went through its qualifiers in the last game defeating Cote d'Ivoire at home, it was something that was exciting for me. And I think that by and large, Morocco and Egypt can actually come to the table with a whole lot of things to give the African continent something to cheer about. They can go very far in the competition, most especially when you consider the fact that these teams also have a lot of their players like Egypt who are playing at home. And so they can relate with each other. They can understand each other. And they can also, looking at how the Egyptian league also is and the likes of big time clubs like Al Ahly of Egypt and all of that, I mean, you can't negate the fact that the North Africans are also one team. They are the side that we can actually look out for because in the past, even on the African continent, they have proven beyond reasonable doubt that they are the football teams you can watch out for from the club level way up to the national team, aside from Nigeria, obviously.
What is your take on kind of the pulse of Nigerian football fans as the Super Eagles prepare for Russia 2018? How would you describe their mood about the squad?
Very optimistic. I mean, a whole lot of the fans, you listen to the radio shows, you listen to all the sports programs that come through on social media. Everyone is talking about the World Cup. Sonny, if we didn't qualify for the World Cup, it was going to be like a kind of like a death warrant that had been sentenced on Nigerians, particularly because we're a footballing nation. We love sports, but of course, football tops it on that list of the sports that we love. So, right now at the moment, a lot of people are talking about Russia. They're talking about they're even suggesting to the Super Eagles coach what players he needs to drop off the team, what players he needs to invite to the team, because we will suddenly have more coaches, you know, in the country now than we have those who are actually ready to go on the pitch or play aside from the professionals. So there's a whole lot of excitement, really. And even on the part of government, I must say, some very interesting statements the sport minister, Solomon Dalung, made in the course of last week was the fact that Nigeria is not going to the World Cup as spectators, but they are going there as contenders. And it became a rhyme that was a soundbite that kept being played over a whole lot of the news bulletins here. That's to tell the kind of excitement even at that level. Even President Muhammadu Buhari has also been a great supporter of the Super Eagles. I mean, following them virtually through all their World Cup qualifying rounds and all of those. So on that level, the government support appears to be there. And then on the part of the fans, I mean, everybody's looking forward to it, most especially when you have the likes of Alex Iwobi, who they see, and Victor Moses virtually every weekend in the English Premiership. They are looking forward to having these players come together and to, you know, be able to take Nigeria beyond the second round, which is something that it appears we have been condemned to in the previous World Cup we've been. But Sonny, let me also quickly add, one major problem we used to have with the Super Eagles team is the question of bonus, payment of allowances and all of that. And it was quite interesting that while the international friendly was being played in Russia, the Nigerian Football Federation, led by Amaju Pinnick, and some of the players got together and had a meeting, and there seemed to be an understanding between the Football Federation and the players as to how their bonuses will be dished out to them in the course of the World Cup. So that is the first time we're having any of sort kind of agreement between the Federation and the players in a written form. And a lot of people have come to applaud that, because what we see is that even during the World Cup, what happens is that we begin to have players who are complaining that they are not being paid their bonuses and all of that. And I thought I needed to add that, because it's a huge, huge, huge development here, and football fans and even sport enthusiasts are actually celebrating that feat by the Nigerian Football Federation.
Samson Omale, our Daybreak Africa sportsman, speaking with us from Abuja, Nigeria. Thank you, Samson.
Thank you very much, Sunny. I have a beautiful sunny side of sport for the rest of the show.
More African football news on the sunny side of sports. Herve Renard, the French head coach of World Cup-bound Morocco, has had his contract extended until 2022. The 49-year-old Renard took charge of the Atlas Lions of Morocco in February 2016. He guided the Moroccans to their fifth World Cup appearance and their first since 1998. Now, when it comes to the coaching carousel in African football, patience is not always a quality on display at the various football federations. So giving Renard a contract extension until 2022 is a real show of faith in his managerial skills. Moroccan football officials say they believe Renard is the right man to take the team forward. Our Voice of America football fans will remember Herve Renard led Ivory Coast to the Africa Cup of Nations title in 2015, 3 years after winning the Nations Cup trophy with Zambia. Elsewhere, the Confederation of African Football has set up a committee to help the continent's five World Cup-bound teams prepare for Russia 2018. The new committee will be led by Ghana Football Association President Kwesi Nyantachi, who is also a CAF vice president. The presidents of the football associations of the five World Cup-bound teams, Egypt, Morocco, Tunisia, Senegal, and Nigeria, along with Zambia's Kalusha Bwalya, make up the rest of the committee. Looking ahead to next year, CAF's executive committee has already agreed to move Africa Cup of Nations qualifying matches from March to October to allow Africa's World Cup-bound teams to prepare for Russia. The World Cup draw is set for December 1st in Moscow, and the new African committee is scheduled to hold its first meeting at the draw. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America. Just ahead, it's 16 wins in a row for the Boston Celtics, the hottest team in the National Basketball Association. In National Basketball Association action Monday night, the Boston Celtics beat the host Dallas Mavericks 110-102 in overtime for their 16th consecutive victory. Star guard Kyrie Irving scored 10 of his season-high 47 points in overtime for the Celtics, who rallied from a 13-point deficit in the fourth quarter. In fact, the Celtics have stormed back from deficits more than a few times in games to keep their winning streak alive. In other results, the Philadelphia 76ers scored a 107-86 win over the visiting Utah Jazz. Australian rookie Ben Simmons had a career-high 27 points and 10 rebounds for Philadelphia. Simmons is already being mentioned as a leading candidate to win the NBA's Rookie of the Year award. And Cameroonian center Joel Embiid added 15 points and 11 rebounds for the 76ers despite a sore knee. Embiid skipped the morning shoot-around because of pain in his surgically repaired left knee. The 23-year-old big man from Yaounde has had an injury plague first few seasons in the NBA, and I know the 76ers are hoping he can stay healthy. Another young big man, 24-year-old Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans, had 36 points and 15 rebounds to help lead the Pelicans to a 114-107 victory over the visiting Oklahoma City Thunder. And yet another young big man, the 22-year-old Latvian Kristaps Porzingis, scored 25 points, grabbed 7 rebounds, and blocked 2 shots to help lead the New York Knicks to a 107-85 victory over the visiting Los Angeles Clippers. It was the 9th consecutive loss for the Clippers, who have a record of 5 victories and 11 defeats. The Knicks improved their record to 9 wins and 7 losses. The Cleveland Cavaliers won their 5th game in a row, scoring a 116-88 road victory over the Detroit Pistons. Superstar LeBron James scored 16 of his 18 points in the first quarter. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Just ahead, the VOA's social media reporter, Andrew Palcheski.
VOA!
I encourage our VOA listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOASunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOASunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America!
Our Voice of America listeners can also follow me on Twitter. My handle is @VOASunnySports. Joining us once again on the show is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be here with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. What's trending on this Tuesday?
Well, Sonny, you were just talking about the National Basketball Association, so let's start with basketball today in the trending topics. And a player who has not played for many years, has actually passed away a number of years ago, but is making headlines on social media. He and his son making headlines. Manute Bol, the Sudanese-American basketball player, tallest ever player in the NBA at 7 feet 7 inches tall, 2.3 meters, only player in the NBA to have more blocked shots than points scored. Trending today because his son, Bol Bol, 7 feet, 1.5 inches of him.
I guess we could say basketball bowl.
Well, his son Bol Bol is now the number 3 high school basketball recruit in the country for the class of 2019. And he has committed to what school he has chosen to go to for college. He writes in the Players Tribune website that he has committed to play at the University of Oregon in an article titled Shoes to Fill. Now, in this article, he writes about a time when he went to a shoe store with his father when he was maybe 6 or 7 years old, and he wanted a pair of LeBron 3s, the LeBron James Nike sneaker.
Okay.
The shoes were too small, but he wanted them anyway, so he told his father that they would fit, and he wore them, and it made his father happy that he could give his son these shoes. And he uses this story to talk about his father, who passed away in 2010, saying, "What would he think now of my emerging career? What would you think about where I want to go play college basketball?" He points out his father, when he died in 2010, he was only 10 years old when his father passed away. So he talks about the decision process, how he decided to go to Oregon, that he wants to chart his own course in basketball and hopes this will be the beginning of a great career where he can replicate a lot of the work that his father did, both on the court and off the court, because Manute Bol, of course, was very well known as a humanitarian and someone who did a lot of good work for not just his local communities that we lived in, but around the world, really. And this is how Bol Bol closes this piece out. He says, "So I'll see you in Eugene," which is where the University of Oregon is located, in Eugene, Oregon. I bet they might even have a pair of LeBron 3s that finally fit me. My dad, he would definitely smile at that. So a very nice tribute to his father and a very nice way to announce where he's going to play college basketball. Fans say it's very touching. Oregon fans say yes, because now Oregon is slated to have 3 of the top recruits in college basketball for 2019. They're looking to really stake their claim among the powerhouses in college basketball. Oregon's been doing pretty well as of late. In the past few years, they've gone quite far. I think they made it to the Elite Eight or Final Four last year. They're hoping to continue that tradition with Bol Bol, adding some star power to their team.
Now, you mentioned his father's height, 7'7". How tall is Bol Bol?
He is 7'1.5", so little over 2 meters by my estimation.
Okay, not quite as tall as his father.
Not quite as tall as his father, but many people pointing out he's still growing. He's only 17 years old, so he still could add on a couple more inches to that height and maybe get close to the 7'7" of his father. But regardless, going to be a very tall player. Hard to miss him out there on the court, I think.
And I think the nickname of Oregon is the Ducks, the
yes.
Ducks of Oregon. So
yes.
It sounds like they'll be paddling nicely for the next few years.
Swimming along quite well. At least that's what they hope, for sure.
Well, what else is trending out there, Andrew?
Well, Sonny, the big story we talked about yesterday as far as President Trump and sports was, of course, the UCLA players being freed from China. That's been a story that's been going on for weeks. But that was not the only sports story that President Trump was tweeting about in recent days. The other day, he tweeted about Marshawn Lynch, the running back for the Oakland Raiders, one of the best-known players right now in the National Football League. And Marshawn Lynch is one of these players who's been participating in the national anthem protests. Now, on Sunday, Lynch and the Raiders faced the New England Patriots at an NFL game in Mexico City. And President Trump noticed that at that game, Marshawn Lynch stood for the Mexican national anthem, something he's not been doing for the American national anthem at games in the U.S. So this is what the president tweeted. He said, "Marshawn Lynch of the NFL's Oakland Raiders stands for the Mexican anthem and sits down to boos for our national anthem. Great disrespect. Next time, NFL should suspend him for the remainder of the season. Attendance and ratings way down." Now, these tweets have added fuel to the fire regarding these NFL national anthem protests, kind of renewing the arguments that have been going on for months that it's an issue of patriotism versus free speech, that the players have a right to do this, or that they owe it to their country and the National Football League to be respectful. So this has just kind of stoked these flames. But one of the new elements now that people are noticing, especially in light of the University of California, Los Angeles players, UCLA players, is maybe some racial overtones. They're noting that Lynch, LeVar Ball, whose son LiAngelo was one of those UCLA players, Colin Kaepernick, are all African-American, and they're noting that other sports figures like Steve Kerr, Greg Popovich, the two coaches of the Golden State Warriors and the San Antonio Spurs, or Mark Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, are not. So they're bringing up some racial issues here. Now, whether that's true or not remains to be seen, but it's added another element to this story as the president continues to target these athletes. Now, it wasn't just the president speaking out about this. We expected Marshawn Lynch to respond. He hasn't said anything yet. But his mother, Delisa, is weighing in. She asked on social media, "What NFL team does Trump own?" Oh, yeah, they wouldn't let him have one. Now, this reference is back. Trump was part owner of the New Jersey Generals, which is a football team, part of the short-lived United States Football League in the 1980s, tried to get into the NFL and was unable to do so. So she is hitting him where it hurts as far as ownership of an NFL team. But ultimately, Delisa Lynch is choosing to stay positive on social media after that tweet. She posted about her son's 12th annual turkey giveaway. Of course, Thanksgiving is this week in the U.S., and Marshawn Lynch for a number of years has given turkeys to people in need in the community of Oakland. So she writes, "If you make a positive outlook on someone's life, that's all that matters." So it's good that she's ending on a positive note, and I think that's how we'll end the social media segment, on a positive note as well.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's very positive social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks very much, Sonny.
And that wraps up the November 21st edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, And that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For too long, Somalis have suffered an unceasing campaign of terrorist violence. Since the beginning of the year, terrorists have perpetrated over 40 attacks of terrorism using armed suicide assaults, truck bombs, and remotely detonated improvised explosive devices in Mogadishu alone. And then, in mid-October, the most devastating attack in Somali history took place. On October 14th, the streets of Mogadishu's Hodan district were jam-packed with traffic and bystanders when a truck loaded with explosives detonated, killing at least 400 people and wounding hundreds of others. Shortly thereafter, a second, smaller explosion, believed to have been part of a coordinated plot with the first attack, took place across town. "The attack was our 9/11," said General Bashir Abdi Mohammed, the deputy commissioner of the Somali police force. No Somali was untouched. The Somali public, outraged by the brazen attack on innocent civilians, have voiced their demand for peace and justice in their country. One element working to turn the tide in Somalia's fight against terrorism is its joint investigative teams, elite Somali police force units that investigate terrorist attacks and gather evidence to identify the perpetrators and prosecute them. Set up with the help of the U.S. Department of State in 2014, they have responded to over 250 major incidents, systematically collecting and analyzing evidence that has been used to identify terrorist perpetrators, their networks, and bring them to justice. Through their hard work and dedication, the joint investigative teams are changing the public's perception of the police. The joint investigative teams are poised to take on one of Somalia's most pressing problems, that is, effectively preventing terrorist attacks. This means that the next step, said Deputy Police Commissioner Mohammed, is to become increasingly proactive with a police force that is capable of detecting and disrupting plots before they are executed. The United States is proud to have had a hand in the formation of these police units, and we will continue to support their efforts to further build critical counterterrorism capabilities. We stand with the people and the government of Somalia in their commitment to defeating terrorism, ensuring the security of their people, and rebuilding their country. We look forward to continuing our cooperation on these and other issues.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, managing editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.